Knowledge Fire.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight.
I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a Christian caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes that sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk just a little about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Jordan.
Dan!
Jordan.
Quick question.
You go first.
What's your bright spot this
You go
week?
First.
Oh, we've been together too long. Now you're answering my questions before I ask them.
Yes, I'm a psychic.
That's my bright spot. No,
I'm a magician, Jordan.
No, I have an incredibly dark bright spot.
Great.
Did you start paying
Paper Mario?
No, which is that our friend of the show, Molly C., at Socialist Dog Mom on Twitter, mother of two very cute dogs, is out of lockup officially. She's still got all kinds of legal mumbo jumbo to deal with.
But yeah,
it's good that she's out, and it's a truly horrifying travesty that she was ever like. She has made me create a new stat.
Uh-huh.
All right,
what's that?
I call it murders above replacement person.
Uh-huh.
Like, she could commit two murders and still be better than the replacement person. Do you know what I'm saying? Three murders, she's not there yet.
Okay.
She's getting there.
It's an interesting stat.
I think it's great.
I don't know if we should use...
Still a net positive. Do you know what I mean?
I'm not sure if we should get into, like, murder and human lifesaver metrics.
All right.
I'm not
that
sure
might be smart.
If money murder ball is the way you want to go with things. But yeah, I saw that on Twitter, and
yes.
I was very, very worried, and you know,
yes.
but looks like
a great amount of support to you, Molly.
Yep.
You are out there on the front lines in the
sure.
fight against fascism. Good for you.
So my bright spot, a little different. I actually got a combination. Looking into the mailbag.
All right.
Yep.
All right.
And also checking in on the year of the. So first things first, big thank you to our audience. This is really speaks highly of our audience that on our last episode, I mentioned that I got some unmarked Rishi seltzers.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
No one falsely took responsibility for
sending
them.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Anybody could have emailed me and been like, it was me.
I believe you.
Yeah. No, that was, I got a message from Amy. Thank you so much. I really appreciate sending the sampler pack. I've not gotten a chance to try them yet, but mostly out of fear because they look like they're fantastic. But also another little side care package from Amy came along.
Mm.
And there's like some treats for Celine and just very excited to plant some of this pet grass that came along.
That's fantastic.
Also, Zip got some masks from Brian.
We did. Thank you very much, Brian.
Got one for me with chili peppers on it.
Oh, indeed.
Because I love Anthony Kiedis.
Indeed. And I am just a smoke.
Smoke
I'm
boy.
Just smoke. It looks like I'm smoking as I'm wearing a mask.
Noob Cybot.
I love it.
I believe.
I think you're right.
Yeah. So last thing really quick in the seltzer mailbag, which is what it's becoming. Kind of. So I mentioned on a recent episode,
sure,
I think it was the last episode, that Aaron sent in Polar seltzers.
Yes.
And I finally drank all of them. And the summer series, I'm here to talk about it.
All right.
You would think that raspberry rosé or strawberry margarita would be the ones that I declare the champions of this set. Because raspberry rosé sounds like it would be amazing.
They're great flavors.
I love raspberries.
Yeah.
I feel like the trying to create a wine kind of vibe.
I think that's a great idea.
Now, I'm not going to say that they're bad. They're good. They're very good. All of them are good.
Okay.
Surprise
winner. Victor.
Yes. Perfectly plum summer.
Really?
The best.
Really?
I had no idea this is the first plum seltzer that we've had in the year of the seltzer.
I am not going to drink a seltzer that makes me shit myself.
Perfectly plum, 82 out of 100.
82 out
it's
of 100.
It's in the top five.
Is it because it keeps you regular?
No, I don't think I had any bowel-related response to it. No, I was just blown away. The flavor is really good.
Yeah.
It's complex. It's... unlike a lot of the other seltzers, like in terms of it, much like passion fruit, it's a fruit flavor that I didn't think I would enjoy. I didn't know what I was getting into with the plum seltzer.
Sure, plum doesn't sound appealing.
So good.
All right, all right.
So good.
All right, what do we got from the raspberry rosé?
Raspberry rosé was coming in at 77.
77? It is very good. That's great. No, it is. That's great. That's only five behind the plum.
I mean, look, it's not enough for the top five.
No, that's true.
At this point. Although it is in, all of them are in danger of Rishi knocking them all out of the top five, quite frankly.
Possible.
But, yeah.
And as we all know, occasionally there could be a revised ruling.
No, there can't be. I was totally caught off guard on my heels by I it was the last one of them I tried because I was like, I don't know about plum.
Sure.
I don't think this is going to be good. Mm. And I was sitting in the fridge. It was late. I was working. I was like, I need a little caffeine-less beverage.
See what happens.
Fucking see the plum in there. And I'm like, well, all right, here we go.
Got to do it.
Blown away. So good.
All right.
So good.
And that's coming after a 77.
Yeah.
It's not like you were expecting anything to beat that mm-hmm. kind of level, right?
No, not
and
at all.
And then plum came out of nowhere.
Yeah. I mean, we had like, I think the lowest of them was the kiwi pink grapefruit, but that was still a 68. Like,
that's still good. That's still solid.
Yeah. Their whole series of summer ones were really good.
Really good.
But plum.
Plum it is.
Anyway, this has been my bright spot is plums, apparently. Maybe I got to fuck around and get some plums
maybe
in my life.
I got to fuck around and get some plums, so, says a 34-year-old.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe I'll grow into aging really well if I love plums. So, Jordan, today we got an interesting thing to go over. We're going to be talking about July 26th, 2020. I'm Dan. This is 2020.
God damn it.
This is Sunday's episode.
Uh-huh.
And what I figured was, you know, our last episode we talked about Alex's special report that he put out on Saturday. I felt like it was kind of, I believe the word you used was perfunctory.
Yes.
It was lacking a little bit of his show.
Very much unnecessary.
So I figured, like, let's give him another chance.
Sure.
Let's pretend he's coming back from vacation on Sunday.
Okay.
Let's pretend he didn't do that.
Mulligan. Yeah.
So we're going to pretend that he's been out of studio.
All right.
And just come back in here. I might have also covered Monday's episode, but I kind of got about 3/4 of the way through this episode, and I just got...
Pass.
Yeah, I got... He has a guest on, and I was like, I don't even care anymore.
Oh,
why?
No.
What I realized is, like, our show is essentially, like... if you listen to somebody, like a commentator, anybody, and they're like, Soros is a Nazi collaborator.
Sure.
You know, I don't need to listen to this person. They are a fucking weirdo and a liar.
Yeah, they're in our government.
Our show is essentially like, what if we didn't take red flags seriously? What if we kept listening to people we should have stopped listening to long ago?
Sure, that's true.
And it became unbearable after about 3/4 of this episode.
He didn't have diamond and silk. He had cubic zirconia and linen.
I don't think that... I think that they're outside of his guest range.
They're too... Yeah. You might be right.
Yeah, I think they've moved beyond Alex Jones.
Oh, poor bastard.
So, before we get down to business, Jordan, we're going to take a little moment here to say thank you to some folks who have signed up and are supporting the show. So, first, Douglas M. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Douglas.
Thank you. Next, Tyler C. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you. Next, Robin C. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you. Next, Chase C. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Chase.
Bunch of last initial triplets.
Like a lot of C's.
Next, Lee P. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Lee.
Next, I think books are neat. Thank you so much. You're now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
I think books are neat, too. Thank you.
Me, three. Next, Ryan C., another C. What is going on?
What's happening?
The C family, strongly policy wonkish.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Ryan.
And finally, I'd like to say thank you to a couple people who donated on an elevated level. We appreciate that very much. So, Sean R.D., thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. Tom D., thank you so much. You are now a technocrat. And Sam, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right?
Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large.
I declare info war on you.
Thank you so much, Sean. Thank you so much, Tom. And thank you so much, Sam.
Yes, thank you very much to all of you.
Yeah, if you're out there listening, you're thinking, hey, I enjoyed the show. I'd like to support what these gents do. You can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, clicking the button that says support the show. We would appreciate it.
Indeed.
Or you can take that generosity and throw it in the direction of a local charity in your area that help people in need.
That'd be great.
What have you.
Absolutely.
So, Jordan, we start here on Sunday. Alex has been out of studio for a week, and we pretend that he didn't do a special
didn't
report that was a disaster.
He didn't do it. You know, you get
Saturday.
Back from a trip, and you're just a little groggy.
Yeah. You shake the cobwebs off.
Yeah, you get a mulligan.
You come in, and you start complaining.
All right.
CNN, the police dogs of thought crime. Sinclair says it will postpone and rework segment featuring conspiracy theory about Fauci. And it says that without any proof, though they don't show the piece, they were going to look at Fauci at the NIH for 45 years, involving gain-of-function transfers of weaponized coronavirus during the Obama administration.
So here's what happened with Sinclair at the end of last week that Alex is now covering.
They did a great job.
They did. So Eric Bolling did an episode of his show where he interviewed the woman from Plandemic, Julia Makovits, and they did a ridiculous conspiracy piece about the allegations that Dr. Fauci created COVID-19. It was straight up InfoWars shit, and they probably felt really good about it when they shot the video. But unfortunately, they'd flown too close to the InfoWars sun, and people like Oliver Darcy at CNN took notice. Darcy wrote an article on CNN pointing out how embarrassing this episode of Bolling's show was, and in response, Sinclair decided to postpone the episode and, quote, rework it.
Wow, something Bolling did was embarrassing? Mm. Oh, that's crazy.
They thought that they could put it out and just fly under the radar, but it turns out the people noticed, and Sinclair rightly realized that putting out this episode would probably be damaging to their brand.
Hey guys, whoops-a-doodle on our part.
On Monday, Sinclair announced that they were giving up on trying to rework the segment and were just going to shelf the entire thing and not air it. Saying of Makovits, quote, given the nature of the theories she presented, we believe it not appropriate to air the interview.
We're Sinclair, and we were really excited to air this stuff that we believe 100%. But you guys realize she's crazy, so we like money more than our lies.
Yeah, this is just an example of a brand that enjoys a certain amount of mainstream appearance going one step too far and realizing they're probably in jeopardy of being seen for what they are, which is another InfoWars.
Yeah.
CNN didn't tell them not to air the piece. That's just dumb spin Alex is putting on this story to make it possible for him to report.
Mm-hmm.
And reporting on this story is going to be a challenge for him. And the reason for that actually has to do with that episode of Bolling's show. Alex has to be in support of Makovits because she's stridently anti-vaccine and she's spreading all the COVID-19 conspiracies that are Alex's bread and butter right now.
Loves it.
However, the other guest on that program is going to be an issue.
Uh-oh.
The other guest was Makovits' lawyer, Larry Klayman.
That asshole is everywhere.
He is. He's like a bad penny.
Where
does
he
showing up.
Come from?
For those of you who don't keep up with our sundry weirdos who populate Alex's world, Larry Klayman was a friend of Alex's back in the Obama bashing days, but in more recent times, they've become bitter enemies. Most recently, Klayman, along with Jerome Corsi, filed the defamation lawsuit against Roger and Alex, which is likely doomed to failure, but isn't the sort of thing you expect to see going down between allies.
Nah.
Alex is going to have to somehow dance around the fact that Klayman is Makovits' lawyer, and you got to assume that this is going to preclude her from ever appearing on InfoWars.
Roger's not giving you those fucking computers.
This is all just very sad.
Yeah.
And honestly, I'm super bummed out that I know about the interpersonal dynamics of these con artists.
Yeah.
It's like I see her on the Bolling's show with Klayman as her lawyer. I'm like, well, she's not going on InfoWars now.
You shouldn't be embarrassed. You know about the complicated interpersonal conflicts between characters on Degrassi, Dan.
True.
So let's leave the embarrassment behind.
My reality TV show is con artists and their lawyers.
Yeah.
I just watch them.
Yeah, that's way better than like if you're Real Housewives of Beverly Hillsing it.
It's hard to find people to gab about this stuff with, though.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. This is an isolating hobby of ours.
Much more easy to find someone to talk to about The Bachelor than like, hey, do you hear what's going on with Larry Klayman? Socially, options are light.
Melissa got voted off, but also Klayman is not getting those computers back.
Klayman got four clients, but he also can't practice law for 90 days.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, great. That might be an issue.
Dan, I gotta go. I know you do.
Yeah, I know. No, I agree with you.
Yeah. So my cat likes hearing about it.
Yeah.
But Alex gets into talking about his conspiracies about Fauci and how Sinclair should be airing this stuff.
Of course they should. It's the truth.
And so Alex has his like sort of beats, his waypoints that he goes to in order to prove his Fauci conspiracies. And they're just headlines.
Fauci at the NIH for 45 years, involved in gain-of-function transfers of weaponized coronavirus during the Obama administration. Now, Dr. McCam shot, please. Look right here.
Okay.
NIH lifts funding pause on gain-of-function research.
Got him.
NIH.gov. That's, and it gets into Fauci and the programs and Bill and Melinda Gates.
Does
the
it?
Actual gain-of-function.
No, it doesn't. And that article is not going to help Alex as much as he wants to think. This is a real post on the NIH's website, and Alex is reading the title correctly, but he's neglecting to mention that the date is December 19th, 2017, which falls just outside the conspiracy timeline.
No, that's so Obama stopped being president technically on January 20th, 2017.
Uh-huh.
And December 2017 is Obama's been president this whole time, Dan.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Fauci was supposed to have done this back during Obama's administration, so if this lifting of the pause on gain-of-function research is happening during Trump's presidency, that does nothing to help prove Alex's case. This article begins, quote, "Today, the National Institutes of Health announced that it is lifting the funding pause dating back to October 2014 on gain-of-function experiments involving influenza, SARS, and MERS viruses. Gain-of-function research is important in helping us identify, understand, and develop strategies and effective countermeasures against rapidly evolving pathogens that pose a threat to public health. The funding pause was lifted in response to today's release of the Department of Health and Human Services framework for guiding funding decisions about proposed research involving enhanced potential pandemic pathogens." If you go and read that paper from the Department of Health and Human Services, you'll immediately realize a few things. The first is that the head of the HHS at that time was Eric Hargan, the fourth of five people that Trump has appointed to that position in his term as president.
No, that was December 2017, so he'd only taken office in January 20th, so I assume that must be the first person that he...
There's a number of people who have been acting.
It was only 11 months difference between them. So there's you pick a guy for at least a year, right, Dan?
Nope. The Department of HHS, which is run by a Trump appointee and is a department in the executive branch of the government, which Trump is in charge of, put out this framework, which led to the NIH lifting the pause on funding this research. All of this traces back to Trump. The second thing you notice is that this framework would never justify or enable creating a bioweapon. There are a bunch of criteria about what kind of research was justifiable, and the idea that that matches up with Alex's theories is just laughable. The third thing that jumps out here is that there's an entire section in this document, this framework, about oversight. Any research that was funded because of this lifting of the pause was subject to review by the Department of Health and Human Services. The entity that was funding the research would report on their intention to the HHS and the Office of Science and Technology Policy, who would evaluate the legitimacy of the research in question. The HHS would then, quote, "develop recommendations on acceptability for HHS funding, including suggestions for additional risk mitigation measures and or terms and conditions of award if funded." This is where it's just such a huge problem for Alex that he doesn't read things past headlines. He has an NIH headline that he thinks is a smoking gun, but literally everything about this story doesn't match up with the narrative that he's presenting, and the actual source he's pointing to really complicates the narrative. Once you understand the review process and oversight that's built into the funding process of these NIH grants, it becomes comical to imagine that what Alex is saying is even possible. There would be so many people that would have to be in on this, and an impossibly long paper trail. The headline sounds good to Alex, though, and that's all that matters.
Dear HHS,
NIH.gov,
I am scientist. I work hard. Please approve my research into a bioweapon. I would address this to the head of the HHS, but unfortunately, I don't know who will
I don't know
be
which one
when this gets here.
Hart.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that headline doesn't work. And I think it actually kind of works against his conspiracies.
Yeah, 100%.
But, I mean, we know Alex. He has more than one headline.
Sure.
Here's Newsweek. Dr. Fauci backed controversial Wuhan lab with U.S. dollars for risky coronavirus research with spliced virus chimeras using weaponized bat viruses. Oh, okay.
Oh, so real important point. Alex is editorializing a little bit on that headline.
Oh, yeah?
The actual headline is, quote, Dr. Fauci backed controversial Wuhan lab with U.S. dollars for risky coronavirus research.
So it didn't add the part about
chimeras.
Chimeras, no. And the bat viruses.
A little bit of that was left maybe that editorialized.
Okay.
Comparing the real headline to the one Alex is reporting kind of makes clear how he doesn't feel like this story is juicy enough on its own. He needs to make it a little bit sexier.
Bat virus.
Chimera.
Come on.
This story is mostly about research going back to 2014. That the NIH helped fund, which involved
Obama.
True.
Sorry for interrupting.
This research involved virologists at that lab in Wuhan surveilling and cataloging existing bat coronaviruses. In 2019, they began doing some gain of function study, but there's no evidence that this is at all related to COVID-19. And again, the NIH is only able to fund gain of function research, like in this case, because of the framework that was put out by the Trump Department of Health and Human Services.
Well, there's that.
It is true that Fauci supports gain-of-function research, and if you want to have a debate about whether or not the risks outweigh the potential breakthroughs, that's a valid conversation to have. It's not the conversation Alex is having, so I'll leave that debate to be had elsewhere by people far more knowledgeable on the topic than me. The point here again is that Alex just has a headline with nothing to go on that's any deeper than that, and it doesn't even match up with what he said.
Yeah, yeah.
So he goes on this, like, it's just really annoying to listen to him try to make points because it's so much just shit talk and then just reading headlines and being like, see?
I really don't understand how you can just read headlines as if that proves your point.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm saying?
And then misread them and then editorialize.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like just like, oh, Dr. Fauci, he created a Wuhan virus in the bat lab now he's killing everybody. That proves everything. Newsweek.
It's almost,
you can't just say that.
It's almost parody. Like,
it really is.
But it's not.
But instead, it's the same as the people who run the government.
So Alex is spinning his wheels on that for a little bit, and then he starts getting into race issues.
No, he should not.
He's feeling a little bit about.
Don't do that.
Well, look, man, he wouldn't if white people weren't under attack.
Oh, God.
Every turn.
We live in a cult. Look at political correctness.
Yes, look at it. What about it?
On YouTube, they get strikes on famous chess channels if white knight takes black pawn because that could be seen as racist.
I don't think that's true.
I was telling a lawyer that the other day. He didn't believe me. He pulled it up and his mouth fell open. That's the level of the cult. And we've bowed to them so much for so long, they think we're going to bow to them again and forever.
Oh no! Your mouth fell open.
I imagine this is how that. Here's how that went. Did you just give me an InfoWars article without a citation?
My mouth has fallen open.
Wow!
This is a story that Alex is completely misrepresenting about chess.
Sure.
His version of it is that people who are playing chess are being accused of racism because, for example, one move is that a white knight takes a black pawn.
Uh oh.
The actual story is that this is based on is about a it's a Sydney-based ABC affiliate. They were working on a segment exploring the idea that chess is intrinsically racist because traditionally the white pieces always get the first move. This came to public attention on June 22nd when Australian chess figure John Adams tweeted about being approached for a comment for the segment, which he responded to with outrage. From what I can tell about this segment, it was planned as an exploration of whether or not this was something that had racist roots.
It was trying to, like, come at it without any bias at all. Just
why,
like,
is this the case?
Why is it that white people always go first?
Take white people out of it. Why is it the case that it's traditionally chess always has the white pieces go first?
Right.
It was meant to be a supplement to the conversation that was happening about things like the name of the Washington football team. It wasn't meant to be a direct accusation that chess is racist.
Man, they are not going to want to hear about Go.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that came up in articles.
Of course.
The ABC anchor who was working on this story, James Valentine, has since tried to tell his side of the story, which is basically as follows. He saw a tweet from a parent who was musing about why the white pieces always go first, based on a question that he'd received from his child. Valentine realized that he didn't know why that was the tradition, so he was working on a piece discussing it, and as part of that, his producers reached out to various chess experts in Australia, including this John Adams.
All right, so they're curious.
Adams assumed that they were working on a story with the angle that chess is racist, saying, quote, "The ABC have taken the view that chess is racist, given that white always goes first. They're seeking comment from a chess official as to whether the rules of chess need to be altered!" Exclamation point.
Oh, boy.
Valentine responded in a Facebook post that, quote, "I haven't decided that chess is racist. I'm not looking for someone to say that chess is racist. I'm looking to create some conversation that will be fresh and will keep someone interested and will tell us something more about the world and why it is the way it is."
Yeah, sure.
This is a zero, and it's just yet another example of Alex lying about dumb, misconstrued, trivial human interest stories in order to amplify and spread white victimhood narratives. A serious broadcaster with the level of importance that Alex pretends he has wouldn't waste their time with a story that's as dumb as this.
Yeah.
Like, the version that Alex is telling.
You know, I don't understand how your reaction isn't the same as my reaction to knowledge that I don't know, which is like, oh, why is that? I would like someone to explain that to me.
Sure.
Or I can go look it up right now instead of just being like, see, they're out of control.
Yeah, I looked into it and I was going to explain it, but it's not.
No.
The story is not really as interesting as I would like it to be for me to tell you.
Right.
It basically is a thing where the people would alternate going first and they'd get to choose their colors. But tournament play came along, it became.
We need to standardize it in some way. So this is an easier way for us to just be like, instead of being like, well, this time black went first, so our annotation has to be altered
It was more or less arbitrary.
Yeah, of course it is. Great.
And it could have gone the other way easily.
Could have gone the other way.
Now, if you want to have a conversation about whether or not back when they made that decision between the black and the white
pieces
going first.
Was there a subconscious bias? Entirely
possible. I don't
know
how you'll ever get to the bottom of that. But
how could you?
But from everything I can tell, it doesn't seem like, you know, we've uncovered any deeply racist story here.
Okay. Now, somehow I feel like Othello might be racist.
Who
knows? Because Othello... Okay, never mind.
Backgammon.
Oh, don't even get me started.
Yeah. So what's really going on here, and the story that Alex is covering poorly, is that a guy tweeted out a misrepresentation of a planned ABC Sydney story about the history of chess, and then white identity adherents got really mad about it.
Of course they did.
That's all that's going on here.
They are not hard to rile up.
No,
turns
certainly
out,
not.
No, it doesn't take much.
There's a bit of tension going on surrounding protests.
Sure.
Certainly... There are things that are going on in Portland.
Oh, like what?
Still, there are other cities. Seattle had some flare up.
Totally,
as you mentioned,
of course.
In Richmond, and Austin, there was a guy who was shot at a protest, which
murdered.
We'll get into in a little bit. But in order to ease into that topic, Alex has to discuss another person who was killed recently.
Black Trump supporter executed in broad daylight for holding up a Trump sign in Wisconsin. Leftist pledge, anyone supporting Trump will be murdered.
This person who died, Alex doesn't say his name ever, doesn't seem to care about anything other than the optics surrounding it.
He's a black Trump supporter, so you don't need to learn his name, Dan.
No, and it's awful. This guy didn't need to die. Whatever the circumstances surrounding it, I it's awful. Mm. It is, it's clearly a murder and should be treated as such.
Yeah.
There's misreporting going on to it, at least at this point. It's unclear whether this guy was murdered because of support for Trump or something else.
Right.
There isn't any reason that Alex should be reporting this as that. He can speculate about it if he wanted to, but that's not what he's doing. He's reporting it very concretely that it was in retaliation for supporting Trump.
He's saying it's a fact.
Yeah, and I think that making a bigger deal out of this is in order to help deflect from the fact that this in Austin, in his own city, there is a very clear-cut case of someone who was a protester, who Alex should support, who was murdered.
Yeah,
Austin protester allegedly armed with AK-47. I don't know why it says allegedly. I mean, he said he had an AK-47. It was a semi-automatic version of that. Shot by a driver while blocking traffic and approaching vehicle. We're going to get to that. First, right now, listen to what, by the way, look at this guy's background. You talk about a
why?
Creep. I'm just going to leave it at that. You talk about bizarre and stupid, LARPing out at night, blocking traffic with a gun pointing at somebody's a threat. People have a right to defend themselves. But this individual, we've got his name, all the information's on Infowars.com. Here's what he said about 10 minutes before he ran out with a mob to stop cars, pointed his gun reportedly at somebody and got shot. Here it is.
Tell us a little bit about your gun again.
It's AK-47.
Why'd you got it out tonight?
They don't let us march in the streets anymore, so gotta practice some of our rights.
Cool, man. Do you feel like you'll need to use it?
Nah. I think if I use it against the cops, I'm dead. And I think all the people that hate us and, you know, want to say to us are too big of pussies to stop and actually do anything about it. So,
yeah. Why'd you start carrying?
Well, our roommate got arrested and they stopped letting us march anywhere, so started carrying.
You're a great virtue signaler, so.
I'm not sure what Alex thinks that this demonstration proves. That was a guy saying that the police were arresting people he knew for expressing their right to assemble, so he was carrying his gun to exercise his Second Amendment rights. He didn't say that he was planning on shooting anyone, and Alex would be reporting this very differently if he was reporting or if he was protesting for some other cause. The protester in question here is 28-year-old Garrett Foster, who was shot and killed by a driver in Austin on Saturday evening. Witnesses have been pretty universal in their telling of the story that the driver was the instigator and aggressor in the situation, despite accusations that Foster shot at the driver first and was the driver's only firing in self-defense.
Yeah.
In reality, protesters didn't really even surround the guy's car, which was another accusation that was made to justify Foster's murder. Videos have been released which clearly show the guy in the car turning at an intersection, specifically where marchers were crossing. The protesters were marching, and the intersection is blocked, which is inconvenient, but this driver drove and accelerated specifically into a group of people, which is completely unacceptable.
Yeah.
According to New York Magazine, quote, witnesses and police say that the motorist fired on Foster after he approached the vehicle, and that Foster did not fire his weapon, but there are conflicting reports about whether or not Foster did anything to threaten the driver. Witnesses have told reporters that Foster kept his rifle pointed at the ground as he approached the vehicle, and that he was not the only protester carrying a firearm at the march. They say that the driver pointed a handgun through the car window and fired at Foster. There were apparently two people who fired weapons, but Austin Police Chief Brian Manley has said that, quote, the first person who appeared to fire was the driver, and then a second person, not Foster, drew a concealed handgun and opened fire at the car as it drove away. This is a tragic story, and there's no reason that Garrett Foster should be dead right now. For Alex to justify this killing is ghoulish, to say nothing of how much this implicates and calls into question his belief in a citizen's right to bear arms. Like, this should be his big issue.
Nope, white citizen's right to bear arms. That's
this dude
the
was
only
white.
Thing he, that's the only thing
Garrett
he cares
Foster
about.
Is white.
I don't understand. I don't understand.
Well, it's because he was there for
it's just a lefty. Leftists aren't people.
Yeah.
Leftists aren't people.
Yeah.
That's so fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
That's so fucked up.
The Second Amendment is actually negotiable to Alex, which is maybe one of the things that we were considering the last domino that could possibly fall.
Nope.
For his, like, it turns out that if you have different political beliefs from him,
you do not
you
have the
don't
right to
have
bury.
The most essential right that Alex believes Americans have.
Yeah.
To the extent that he will smear you and make you look like the person who's in the wrong after you've been killed.
Yeah.
Just, you know, in order to get around that. So Alex doesn't have to defend him as someone who is expressing their Second Amendment right to be armed.
Yeah.
In his state. In his home state.
In his hometown.
Yeah. I have no idea what Alex is talking about when he says that he looked into Foster and that he's a creep. I looked into it. I just don't know what he could be talking about. And one of the only things that keeps coming up that seems like something Alex would be referring to in all of the coverage is that he was at the protest with his black quadriplegic fiance. Foster and his fiance had been together since they were 17. And in 2011, she came down with a condition that nearly killed her and required her arms and legs to be amputated. Since then, he's taken care of her. And to quote Foster's mother, quote, he loved that woman unconditionally. I can find no reason to think that Foster was a creep. Alex needs to justify this. And until he does, I have to assume that Alex thinks there's something intrinsically weird or wrong about This guy.
Miscegenation.
Sure. Or the fact that she was quadriplegic.
Right.
You know, like,
maybe.
I don't know. Whatever it is really fucked up.
Yeah. I don't understand.
Yeah.
It is never. I wish we had never even speculated on whether or not there was a bottom. Like, from day one on our first episode, we should have been like, just so everybody knows, no matter how long this podcast goes, no matter what changes, Alex has no bottom. Alex believes in nothing.
We didn't know that.
Nothing. That's what I would do if I was a time traveler. Killing Hitler? Nah. Can't do nothing. Go back in time. Tell me to say something.
I mean, I think that would be bad for us, because I think that
we would have stopped.
Maybe. But also, I think that our cynicism and like disgust is earned. You know,
yeah,
like,
totally.
Because there was benefits of doubt that had been given along the way of like, we didn't know how, like, we knew he sucked, but we didn't know he sucked as much as he does.
No.
And I think that that's what's made this an experience and a learning thing for me.
Yeah.
If I'd known going in, hey, everything is just going to constantly get more disappointing.
Yeah.
Alex is going to give up on every principle.
Yeah.
Then I don't know if it would be as interesting for me.
Yeah. I can't imagine starting out a show being like, we're going to talk about a man who doesn't believe in anything. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that would be a real bummer.
I don't even know what you could do.
Yeah.
So there is likely going to be developments on this story, so we'll see what comes of it. But like, if anyone who fired weapons will end up being charged, I don't know. But for now, the available information does not in any way support Alex's reporting on this story. He's just providing coverage that justifies the killing of a protester on the side that he disagrees with. And then he's using the fact that they had a gun to prop up that justification, which is probably the most cowardly and hypocritical thing I can imagine him doing. And he should be deeply ashamed of himself. He should be getting protested by all the gun weirdos that have been his allies for the entire time of his career. Yep. Larry Pratt should be calling for him to be off air.
100%.
All of these fucking Ted Nugent should be showing up at Alex's house and telling him to suck his rifle.
You bet.
Or whatever. Like, it's nonsensical.
You might as well say I'm advocating for gun control just for the left.
Hey, Alex is a gun grabber.
He's a gun grabber.
Yeah.
He's a gun grabber. Alex does not believe in the Second Amendment.
Certainly not.
Whatsoever.
Nope.
This whole thing, if you believe in Alex, you don't believe in the Second Amendment.
Sure.
You believe in nothing.
Nothing.
Emptiness.
But there's a way that Alex tries to pretend that this guy was pointing his gun at these folks, this guy in the car, in order to justify that it's like, hey, you know, you're gonna get shot,
right?
And I mean, like, it's interesting how that isn't applied to the people in St. Louis who were pointing guns at protesters.
It's a surprise. So if they had been murdered,
I guess Alex would have
I guess
to justify
Alex would
that.
Say that that's fine.
Yeah, because they were pointing a gun.
They were
at
pointing
people.
Guns at people.
Well, I'm sure he wouldn't.
I'm sure he wouldn't either.
But that's the game that he tries to play, and so he tries to pretend that. There's proof of this.
Here's the Austin protester with his AK-47 who runs out. And again, we've got paused still shots on Infowars.com from the video showing him wind the rifle up to the window of the car with people beating on it, screaming, going, he's white, trying to pull the white person out. And it's white people mainly saying and doing it.
You can go to InfoWars, and they don't have any proof of the sort that Alex is claiming.
It's odd.
There's an embedded tweet from an account with 47 followers that purports to show Foster pointing his gun at this car. But
blue check mark?
No. And also, the image clearly doesn't show that.
Yeah.
It shows Foster near the car with one arm back, but the angle of his gun very clearly appears to be pointing down. It's difficult to explain this without the imagery, but from the angle this picture was taken from, there's literally no way that his gun could be pointed at anything further up than the bottom of this car's tire. And the reason for that is there are things behind him that would have been blocked by the gun's barrel if it was any further up.
Gotcha.
Like, you can see the back of his arm.
Yeah.
So you can see where one point of the gun is, the back, the butt end of it.
Right.
But it's clearly pointing downwards. Otherwise, you would have seen, like, this guy who's standing behind him blocked.
Yeah.
He would have been blocked by this.
Yeah.
The color of his shirt and his arm would not have been a thing that you couldn't see a black gun barrel pointed through.
Gotcha.
So it's just impossible. This image itself is exculpatory. It shows that it wasn't pointed at the car.
Oh, those 47 followers are going to be pissed.
Yeah. Also, the image is not of protesters surrounding an innocent person's car. It's the aftermath of this car driving directly into a group of people. Perhaps at that point, the driver felt worried about people surrounding his car, but the car would not have been surrounded if he hadn't turned and accelerated into a group of people. This is a very disgraceful display Alex is putting on here. He's defaming a guy who was killed, and I think that there's a probably a pretty decent chance he might be opening himself up to some kind of legal action.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
I wouldn't be too surprised if he's, you know, in because that dude's a private citizen. Like, yeah. it's not like Garrett Foster is a public figure.
So fucked up.
Yeah,
unacceptable. I don't even know. Like, I guess if he had come to bat for the guy, maybe I'd be like, well, at least he believes in the Second Amendment or something. You know, like if he came out and was like, look, this guy was a protester and I think these people are disgusting and what they're fighting for is bullshit. But the man was carrying open. It was registered. He was doing everything right and he got murdered. I guess I'd be like, well, there's something, you know, but now it's just it feels so empty when the Second Amendment is gone. For Alex and me, it feels empty.
It's jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to try and like fantasy book, like, what would it be like if Alex had principles?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And I think that we would have responded to a lot of things over the course of this very differently.
Sure.
And I think that Alex would be in a lot of the positions that he's in now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that imagining that one singular decision is tough because then we'd be like, oh.
There'd be a domino effect backwards that would affect everything.
Well,
not
everything, but certainly I think there would be a much different picture of Alex than what you clearly have now.
A soulless husk.
Yeah, I think that if you... I think that the, you know, obviously we're never going to see eye to eye with Alex on anything. Probably.
Right.
Especially political positions and social issues and stuff like that.
Because he's a lunatic.
Don't ever really expect to. You think that like some things transcend and it just turns out they don't.
No, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
Yeah.
He doesn't live in America. He lives in fictional fascism land.
Mm-hmm. And so he jumps around a little bit to other spots of unrest.
Sure.
And he talks a little bit about Portland and how Mayor Ted Wheeler went out to the protest a little while back.
Yeah.
And Alex has an interesting perspective on that.
And all these armchair leftists, like the mayor of Portland, went out to support them burning down the courthouse, and then they attack him because he's an old white dude. They go, look, he's white. They don't even know he's the mayor under Soros commanding them.
They knew very well that he was the mayor.
They knew really well that he was the mayor.
Yeah, Alex is trying to turn this into something where it's like, oh, he's white. And it wasn't. It was because he's Ted Wheeler.
Yeah.
The situation that Alex isn't taking into consideration is the fact that, you know, that wasn't just about federal agents.
Mm-mm.
The situation and the protests in Portland have to do with also the Portland Police Bureau, which is under the aegis of Ted Wheeler.
Wait, so you're telling me that they don't appreciate the guy who ordered the cops to mercilessly terrorize them for 45 days?
Yeah.
And then showed up and tried to make it into a thing about... Yeah.
It's more of a PR kind of looking thing for him to show up at the front of this thing with the federal folks there. When there had been weeks and weeks gassing and beating people who were protesting. So I think that the dynamic that is actually there is much different than what Alex wants.
Yeah.
But he wants just this optical thing of white.
Sure.
He's the one who's running all of Antifa. Yeah. And they don't even realize.
Yeah,
off. This is childish shit.
Yeah. I don't think he would have the same take if, because here's the same thing that would happen if Lori Lightfoot, Chicago's miserable, terrible mayor, showed up at a protest here and got tear gassed. Everybody would be like, we still fucking hate you. Yeah. You ordered the Chicago cops to do this shit.
So Alex gets into Colorado. There was a shooting there recently. And also he spends most of his time talking about from last month. Mm-hmm. There was a different shooting. And so it doesn't really talk about the current day one, but spends a bit of time on the book because he already has details on that one.
Sure.
And we've got Colorado, another Colorado. Oh, wait, there's more. Not just yesterday's Colorado. We have another Colorado where they shoot the man. Last time I heard, he's in critical condition, brain dead.
And it was a liberal white lawyer did it. And he, in his mugshot, he's so proud of what he did. He shot a Nazi.
So this is Alex returning to a story we covered a while back. This is about a man in Alamosa, Colorado, who was shot by a guy at a protest. When we discussed the story, my position was that the shooter was way out of line, and it did not appear that this driver was endangering people or threatening to hurt anyone. I don't know any information that subsequently come out that would make me revise my position.
Sure.
But I remember covering this, and the video does not show anything even close to justifiable.
Yeah.
That said, I pulled this clip because I want to demonstrate how Alex is a complete and casual liar. In that clip, he said the last he'd heard that this guy who got shot was in critical condition and brain dead. Weirdly, if you look for an update on Danny Pruitt, who was the shooting victim, you can find an Alamosa News article from June 26th, which says that he was discharged from the hospital on that Wednesday, and his lawyer said, quote, "He's very pleased to have been released and very excited about getting to see his daughter." That's not to say that he's fully recovered by that point, but he's on a great path in that direction, to the point where the doctors could release him to recover at home. I don't think I need to say this, but if you're brain dead, you can't do that.
No, he was really excited to see his granddaughter, which you could see on the EKG.
Jordan, brain death is irreversible.
No.
And it describes when all of your brain functions cease. People in that state can be kept alive with artificial processes, but you will never recover and you will not be able to go home and heal.
Come on.
Alex is making up details about this case because it makes his political targets look worse. He doesn't care at all about actual reporting. He's he's trying to make his enemies look worse by making damage that they've done seem worse when just shooting the guy is terrible.
Yeah.
I don't have any interest in supporting this guy for shooting that guy.
I cannot believe that. I mean, in a court, I guess, like when you're determining sentencing, you're like, he shot him in the leg, so that's not attempted murder or something, I guess, as opposed to shooting him in the chest. I don't know. And the punishments are different. Fine. You don't need to add anything after shoots a guy for me to be like, fuck that guy.
Well, in this case, that's not even relevant because it's shoot in the head. You know? And to be perfectly honest, like, I mean, you could look at it from a consequential perspective, but a lot of it is a little random, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever happens after you make the decision to shoot somebody sometimes you can get lucky and they don't die. Sometimes you get unlucky and they do, you know? Or, you know, whatever perspective you want to have on it.
Sure.
A lot of it's outside of your control. Yeah. And that's why you shouldn't shoot people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Yeah. It's a good TED Talk.
Yeah.
I think it's a simple one, but a really important one.
So Alex has a theory, and that is that this guy in Colorado who shot this driver...
is Soros.
No.
Oh.
He did this because he thinks he's going to get away with it.
Oh, okay.
Man who was driving.
By the way, last time I heard that guy you shot was on life support. We need to find that person even alive? And you look at the guy that he's been given a mugshot for capital murder, and he looks like he's having an orgasm because he believes he'll be released from prison after the communist overthrow, and he'll be in a gulag over you and your family. Sink again, boy! Ain't gonna happen! We'll be right back. Stay with us.
So, yeah, I guess this guy figured he was gonna just get out once there's a communist uprising.
So this guy was like, hey, dude, they stormed the Bastille.
Right.
They'll storm Colorado local prison. Yeah.
I will be the Marquis de Sade this situation.
Me and my three other buddies in the Bastille are going to get out of here.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, I don't know if that's this guy's plan. I think he might have just been
I think it's a bad plan.
A disturbed individual, maybe. Anyway, some people have brought up that there's this Frontline report about Alex that's going to be coming out. We're recording, I believe it airs this evening.
Right, he needs to preemptively deal with that, right?
Kind of, but I think he's just more relishing the idea that people are going to be talking about him.
Sure.
He's pretty excited about that. I don't have any knowledge about this Frontline report. I have no idea. I wouldn't know about it unless people had tweeted at me and asked.
I would never have noticed.
I'll watch it, and if it's interesting, we might cover it for an episode.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It might just be stupid shit.
Are we going to do how not to cover Alex Jones 4 or maybe. Whatever number we're on?
Maybe. Or yeah. It could be good. I
it
have
could
no
be great.
Idea. Yeah,
it could be great. They could have done a great job.
I don't want to prejudge. Like, it could
of course
be a,
not.
It could be a Megyn Kelly situation, or it could be a really well done,
totally.
Accurate piece.
Could
and
be.
Time will tell.
Let's hope.
But Alex is excited about it.
Of course.
Which doesn't bode well in my mind.
While they simultaneously have Frontline coming out with a multi-series show of complete fiction. Because I've talked to people that have been involved in the production. Unbelievable. They're actually going to say, I'm told, that Russians fund InfoWars. Wonder how much they had to pay people to say that. Look at this headline. United States of Conspiracy examines how three men, Alex Jones, Roger Stone, and President Trump,
there you go,
helped to lay the foundation for the conspiracy theories to take center stage in America's national conversation.
Fair point.
And on the front page of their Twitter, front page of Frontline, it's me at the evil Austin rallies against compulsory mask. How horrible we are.
Alex doesn't seem to be too worried or too threatened about this.
No,
so that makes me think that either he's really miscalculating or it won't be anything that is too hard-hitting. That's kind of the feel. Because he freaked out before Megyn Kelly's piece came out. And that's because I think he was aware that she had something on video that he was worried about being in the actual piece.
Totally.
I would imagine that whatever this is, I honestly don't believe that he knows somebody who's involved who said that they're going to say that Russia paid him or whatever. I don't believe that. But
doubtful.
Whatever this is, it just doesn't seem like. I think that he's looking at this as a possible PR win as opposed to something that threatens his credibility with his audience.
In his mind, and probably reasonably so, it's not like PBS is going to take away his audience. His audience isn't going to watch PBS and be like, oh no.
It seems unlikely.
You know, so the only thing that he can get out of this is people who don't know anything about him who are like, how dare PBS be mean to Alex Jones and Roger Stone and Donald Trump, and then maybe check him out.
Yeah, and Alex can pretend it says whatever he wants.
Of course.
And I'm a victim.
Bat viruses.
Fund the info war.
Toss it in there.
So Alex starts rambling about Alexander Solzhenitsyn of Gulag Archipelago fame.
Sure.
And I don't know. This is sad.
Well, the Washington Post says front page, anyone that doesn't submit to us will serve prison time. Oh, with Antifa jail guards? You know, I think I'll just go ahead and take my
We love guarding fighting. Jails.
And that's all I'm going to say. I said I'd read this. I've already lost my Alexander Solzhenitsyn quote. Let me just say this. We're funded by you. If you need water filtration, we've
Good
got
work.
The best of the best price you're going to find. Air filtration, best you're going to find.
Oh, boy.
Panic. Sell.
Yeah. I'm gonna ramble about Antifa jail guards at gulags. I remind myself of Solzhenitsyn. I don't know where that quote is. I've misplaced my Solzhenitsyn quote. Guys, we got water filtration. What the fuck?
Hey, I didn't get lunch today. Antifa guard, what are you there? I'm ideologically opposed to you being in here in the first place. Get on out of here, buddy. Come on, man.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, Alex, like I told you at the beginning of this episode, about three quarters of the way into this, I lost my will to live.
Sure.
And that's largely because Alex is rationalizing the killing of a protester based on the fact that he had a gun that Alex is claiming he was pointing at people, but the photograph that he provides as evidence of this doesn't show that, which really, really hurts his Second Amendment positions.
Yeah.
And then he has a guest.
But I was just returning from New York, where another great family spent a fortune to get me and the good senator, good congressman Clay Higgins, to a pro-law enforcement rally, a pro-law and order rally, the biggest one. It was purported to be the biggest pro-law enforcement, law and order rally in the history of America. They were expecting over 10,000 people because Uncle Ted was going to bring my six-string weapon of mass construction and perform a fire-breathing star-spangled banner for the troops and boost their morale at a time where the Marxist, Democrat, Antifa, MS-13, Black Lives Matter monsters have destroyed the morale of the law enforcement sheep underdog heroes across this country.
So Ted Nugent's on to complain about losing a gig.
Oh,
that's
man.
That's what's going on.
Do you know what's terrible?
What's that?
A few days ago, I watched an interview that he did. I was trying to think of another reverse situation. Uh-huh. I watched an interview he did with Eric Bolling.
Oh, wow. Worlds collide.
I will tell you something right now. Word for word, he said that on
I'm sure.
One America.
Oh, yeah.
Word for word.
That's practice.
That's yeah. Black Lives Matter, MS-13. Yeah. Anybody not white.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This. So he lost a gig at a pro-cop rally. It was a rally that was in Long Island, and it...
Cop scratch fever? Come on now. I'll take 5 points.
So that rally still went on just as planned, but people were mad about Ted Nugent being booked to appear, so they complained, and his invitation was no longer there.
Yeah.
The organizers released a statement saying, quote, "The purpose of this demonstration is to bring people together in support of the men and women of law enforcement. While we wholeheartedly appreciate anyone who supports the men and women in blue, including Mr. Nugent, the controversy over his appearance is contrary to the objectives of this demonstration." Who knows exactly what it was about Ted Nugent that made him unpalatable for people? Honestly, could have been any number of things.
Could have been.
From the accusations of him assaulting minors to his songs that. About how he likes to assault minors.
There are those.
Hard to say.
Yeah.
But since Ted is on our radar again, now's a great time to learn about more about why Ted Nugent's a complete pile of shit. We've discussed a lot of his creepy, very clear indications that he's a predator, like his song titled "I'm a Predator."
That one is a little bit damning.
Yeah,
that one's a little damning.
But let's look at some of his thoughts now, Jordan.
That's almost like if you were in court and they were like, "How do you enter your plea?" Hold on, before you respond with guilty or not guilty, we're gonna play this song "I'm a Predator," and you think about what you're gonna say.
That's like imagining the defense lawyer for C murder yeah. and he was on trial for homicide. It's like, yeah. What's your client's name?
Okay.
I'd like to point to you to the C murder lyric. You take the C out in my name and you're left with a homicide.
Right.
It's gonna be an uphill battle.
All right, so I'm gonna struggle with this one.
Mr. Nugent, did you write the song "Jailbait"? Plead the fifth. So I'd like to talk to you now, Jordan, about Ted Nugent's thoughts about apartheid.
Sure. Great. I'm sure they're fantastic. What is he, Elon Musk now? Christ.
There's an interesting article that interviewed Ted Nugent back in 1990 from the Detroit Free Press. And man, this stuff has not aged well.
Oh, boy.
As it happens, back in 1990, Ted Nugent had a ranch in South Africa that he used for bow hunting.
Really?
Yep.
What?
Yep.
He's that guy?
Oh, yeah.
Jesus Christ, did he write a song called "I Love Rhodesia" too?
Might as well have.
Christ!
When asked about his ranch and apartheid, Ted said, quote, "My being there isn't going to affect the political structure. Besides, apartheid isn't that cut and dry. All men are not created equal."
Oh boy!
"The preponderance of South Africa is a different breed of man." Whoa.
Okay. So let me actually, you know what? Let's get this down to the very brass tacks, Dan.
Uh-huh.
All right. Apartheid is incredibly cut and dry.
Not according to Ted Nugent.
In fact, you could say that this is a situation that is a black and white issue. You're either good or bad on apartheid.
I mean,
zero middle ground.
I mean, he said literally right after that, all men are not created
exactly.
equal.
So it's not, there's no murky understanding. He literally understands.
I thought that truth was self-evident that all men were.
Well, hold on now one second.
Uh-huh.
Not in South Africa.
So he says the preponderance of South Africa is a different breed of man. And then he follows that up by saying, quote, "I mean that with no disrespect."
What?
God
damn it. Somebody, God damn it.
Nugent went on to say, quote, "They are still people of the earth, but they're different. They put bones in their noses. They still walk around naked. They wipe their butts with their hands. And when I kill an antelope for them, their preference is the gut pile. That's what they fucking want to eat, the intestines. These are different people. You give them toothpaste, they fucking eat it. I hope they don't become civilized."
The article
also mentions that his upcoming tour of Japan is called the, quote, "Jap Whack Tour," which Ted explains thusly.
Oh, no.
Quote, I mean no disrespect.
Okay, now stop right there. Here's how you end that.
He says thought. That. He says that a bit.
The end.
Yeah.
I mean no disrespect and no follow up.
Mm-hmm.
No follow up.
Whenever I say N.
Oh, no.
In the next sentence.
No.
It's a hard N word.
Oh, boy.
Hard N word.
Oh, boy.
Quote, I mean no disrespect. I'm sure the Japanese are wonderful folks. And if I'm with a bunch of guys, we may talk about babes in a certain way. I use the word N a lot because I hang around a lot of N's and they use the word N and I try to use words that communicate. I'm a fun guy, not a sexist or racist.
Man, everybody who's bitching about cancel culture now
right.
needs to go back in time and see what people got away with, uh-huh. which is the same shit they're getting away with now.
Yeah, and I mean, every time that I said N in the article, it's Ted
straight
Nugent
up.
Saying
straight up.
Hard R's.
Yeah.
Weirdly, later in the article, Ted explains that whack is specifically a word that he uses to describe killing animals, and that his, quote, hunting buddies are known as whackers. Nugent, of course, is the whack master. Seems like Jap Whack becomes a really weird name for a tour, given that context. I mean, no disrespect.
How?
Also, for all of his false and faux performative patriotism, this passage about Nugent dodging the draft seems pretty ironic. Quote, Nugent wanted no part of Vietnam. He claims that 30 days before his draft board physical, he stopped all forms of personal hygiene. The last 10 days, he ingested nothing but Vienna sausages and Pepsi. And a week before his physical, he stopped using the bathroom altogether, virtually living inside his pants, caked with his own excrement, stained by his urine. That spectacle won Nugent a deferment, he says, though the Free Press was unable to verify his draft status.
I think he's full of shit. But also, pun in absolutely intended.
I'm sure.
But also, that's a pretty novel way to dodge the draft.
I think it's awful. To be totally clear, I think it's okay to not want to go to war and to not want to be part of the draft. If they brought back the draft at any point in my life, I would not submit myself to it. But I also wouldn't try to subvert the process by shitting my pants a bunch. There are countless conscientious objectors who, for ethical or religious reasons, refuse to participate in any kind of war. And sometimes they pay a penalty for it, but they accept that as part of their political statement. What Nugent did was be a cowardly dick. And the idea that he would look back on this and brag about it as an adult is pretty sad.
Don't forget, he is a cowardly dick covered in his own shit.
That's true.
So he's not going up the ladder.
Yeah, and into apartheid.
Okay. All right. So if I understand this correctly, a sex predator, racist, misogynistic, on top of being, even worse, who owns property in South Africa, gets to become famous, rich, and spend the rest of his life in the public eye because he's a one-hit wonder. That seems unfair. I think fastball should be still around if we're measuring by this shit.
Yeah. And I think you've kind of touched on my main point, and that is that Ted Nugent is a racist, predatory monster who has the brain of a weapons-obsessed child and hasn't even ever had an album or single reach the top 10 on the charts, and has never had a number one single, and his highest peaking album was Scream Dream, which reached number 13 40 years ago. He's a worthless sack of shit who's not even relevant in his primary occupation, which is music. So yeah, it makes sense that people wouldn't want him booked at an event, regardless of the event's character. He makes your event look bad, because if he's there, it implies that you paid him to be there. And if you paid him to be there, you're an asshole.
Yeah.
Whiny ass Ted coming on InfoWars to complain about losing a gig because of his long and very overt past of being a piece of shit. So toxic that even a pro-cop rally had some reservations about being associated with him.
Yeah.
What a bunch of babies.
All ATAB. All Teds are bad.
Ted Wheeler,
Ted
Nugent.
Wheeler, Ted Nugent.
Ted
we got
Anderson.
Two bad three for three on Teds.
I'm sure there's some good Teds out there. What about the movie Ted?
Never movie seen Ted, it. Not good. I mean, Better Off Ted was pretty good. That was a pretty clever
Drop Dead
sitcom.
Ted.
Yeah, Drop Dead Ted. I don't think that's the one. Was Martin Short in Drop Dead Ted?
No, that was Clifford.
Oh, gotcha.
So it wasn't that the pro cop rally rejected Ted per se. Although they and the organizers seemed all right with it once he wasn't coming.
Yeah.
The issue came down to something else, and that is that Ted Nugent got threatened by Andrew Cuomo.
Sure.
And I literally was threatened by Governor Cuomo and his... policies that if I set foot in New York to play the national anthem and thank the law enforcement heroes, if I dare enter his communist New York area, I would be put under house arrest and quarantine for 14 days, thereby destroying the only chance to have a morale boost by the heroes of the NYPD, and boy, are they pissed.
I'm pretty sure that Andrew Cuomo didn't personally threaten Ted Nugent.
No.
In this article in the Long Island Press, they say that Nassau County executive, one of them, said, quote, "The reason for his absence, Ted, is that because he was, quote, reminded of New York State's quarantine orders and Nassau County's protest protocols. Travelers to New York from over 30 states with significant community coronavirus spread are required to quarantine for 14 days per Governor Cuomo's executive order."
Yeah, I remember
that.
It's
not specific to him. It's he's from Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a convenient way for everyone involved to save face. The quarantine rules exist, and Nugent is coming from Texas, which is an at-risk state currently, so the state of New York covers their base. The city council in Long Island obviously didn't want Ted coming, so they solved that problem. The rally organizers realized that they were going to look real bad if they have Ted at their rally, so that solves that problem for them. Ted probably would have liked to go, but this is just as good.
Yeah,
he gets
totally
to play the victim and yell about Cuomo trying to personally bar him from the state.
Totally.
Everybody gets what they need out of this situation, and no issues are really resolved. When there is a big issue that needs to be addressed here, and that is that Ted Nugent has no place in adult society. If he wants to live out his days being a racist creep shooting arrows at animals privately, I can't stop him from that. But there's no reason that anyone should ever accept the notion that he's a voice worth having in the public sphere. Yeah. His music career is embarrassing compared to his contemporaries, and his existence as a political figure is basically just him yelling that Obama needs to suck his rifle. At this point, people need to treat him like who he is, a loser InfoWars guest. If some event is booking him, it's not because he's a draw or because he's good at guitar. It's a political statement. They're supporting his brand of racist extremist politics, so quite honestly, anytime Nugent has a show anywhere, it should get protested. He shouldn't be welcome as a public figure.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah.
Like, he has worn out his welcome long ago.
Agreed.
And he should be treated as such. Like, anytime someone has him on, it's not because Wango Tango rocks.
No.
Hey, sure. If he's doing a concert or something, maybe that's not a political statement for, like, some theater to book him on his tour or whatever.
Mm.
Then, you know, whatever. It is what it is. But for this rally to have him come do the national anthem, that's different.
I think I completely disagree with you on that.
I might also.
I mean, if it was a comic and they were a racist piece of shit predator and they got booked at a club, I'd be like, you're making a political statement, which is that it's okay to be a comic and be a racist.
You may be
predator.
Right. You may be right. You know? I hadn't unpacked that.
Fuck you.
Yeah, that might be true. I just hadn't really, you know, I guess I hadn't given a whole lot of thought to the music business and
well, that's fair.
How that works. But maybe it is more of a everything Ted Nugent does. He should just be yelled into bow hunting privately for the rest of his life.
He should be called a whiny loser every time he walks out his door.
Yeah.
By everyone.
And everybody should remind him of him banning guns at his own concert.
Totally.
Like, it's just like,
yeah, you're a whiny loser who doesn't believe in your own bullshit. So shut the fuck up and go away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And stop it with this bullshit, too, where he's trying. You could hear it in that last clip. And in this next clip, it gets even worse, where it's just like, well, the real victims are the great policemen who don't get
fuck
to hear
off.
Me play the national
fuck
anthem.
Off.
My buddy flew me back home and I got out my bow and arrow and my fishing rod. And I spent a wonderful couple days with my dogs on my miraculous paradise here in Texas. So they didn't hurt Ted Nugent at all. I mean, are you kidding me? What can they possibly do to me? And I'll tell you what, nothing. But you know what they hurt? They hurt the spirit and the morale of the New York Police Department heroes and their families.
Well, that's the next thing is their open season. The left wants to brutalize the police, not to get rid of them, but to take them over.
Oh, no. What will the police morale be without Ted Nugent playing?
I think the phrase I'm looking for is delusions of grandeur. I think that's the one I'm looking for.
I think it's partially that. And I think it's partially also just like, this is a way I can acceptably talk about this and not sound whiny.
What I need to
I lost
do.
A gig.
like self-aggrandize.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You know who's the victim here? I didn't get a check, and people didn't get to enjoy my sweet licks.
You know who's the real victim here? At the end of the day, once again, South Africans. What the fuck is he doing?
I don't know if he still has that ranch. That article was from 1990, I mean,
fuck him.
Yeah, I would say that the fact that I can't find any articles that are like Ted Nugent profusely apologizes for equivocating and supporting apartheid, saying it's not a cut and dry issue. That leads me to believe that he maybe didn't have a personal evolution on the subject.
Very much doubt it.
Not good. So here, Ted Nugent is expressing his belief that a bunch of different groups, they're all really just the same thing.
By the way, there's no difference between Democrats, Antifa, MS-13, the jihadists, and the Black Lives Matter. They're dedicated to destroy the very...
Well, that's my next question for you. I know we only got you one more segment here, and I appreciate the time on this Sunday.
They're all the same, man. All these groups are the same.
Wow.
Cool. Very dumb, very stupid child.
What a fucking moron.
Yeah. It should not be taken seriously in any capacity.
Get him out of here.
So he starts talking about this new initiative that he has called Hunt the Vote.
Earth Defense Force.
No, that would be great.
Yeah.
Hunt the Vote.
Hunt the Vote.
Which sounds fucking scary.
Well, in the 90s, like, we had Rock the Vote. And now here we are.
It sounds like he's going to go to inner city precincts and like voting centers with a bow.
No.
It sounds like when you say hunt the vote,
no,
it doesn't sound like the same as rock the vote.
No, what he's going to do is calmly track individual voters and get them in his sights and then convince them to vote for Trump.
Well, I mean,
using rhetoric that he's very good at.
The issue that I find is like hunt the vote is, you know, the object of hunt is the thing that is killed. Yeah. And is attacked.
Yes.
Rock the vote. When you rock something, you're making it better. You know, you're rocking the venue.
Yeah,
you know?
You're having a great time.
Yeah, yeah. So when you say rock the vote, it's kind of like, oh, we're making things.
We're having a good time.
Enlivening.
We're going to get Mud Honey to play. Everybody's going to have fun.
Hunt the vote. Fucked up.
I'm going to.
Fucked up branding.
Here's what I'm going to call it. The most dangerous vote.
I think this is very dumb. I think it's also, I went and I checked out their website and it does not seem to be working.
How's it going?
They want people to pledge to vote
for Trump.
Sure. And what it is obviously a data gathering operation
because
it's just like, okay, we want people to put in their personal information and then pledge to vote. Obviously, it's so you can contact them with a mailing list or something.
Right.
And their goal is 500,000. It's like, wow. I don't know if you're going to swing the election with that.
You're going to sell a lot of email addresses with that.
They were at like 10% or something when
that's
I checked.
Still too
I don't
many.
Know how long it's been, but yeah, it doesn't seem to be getting the traction that they're looking for.
Not good.
But so Ted tries to promote this, and these people need to just stop referring to history. It's not good.
It sounds ridiculously simple because it is. Huntthevote.org. Just register and get to the front lines. This is the Alamo. We need to shoot Santa Ana's men.
Oh, my God.
HuntTheVote.org.
Absolutely. We've got to go to break. We'll do one more segment. Again, please come back for longer in the week because things are so hot.
You lost the Alamo. The Alamo was a failure.
So now they're being hunted by the Mexican army in this situation.
I don't know.
Okay.
But, I mean, you got to stop being like, this is the Alamo, because you're just saying we're going to lose.
Yes.
And one of the main reasons we're going to lose is that we shouldn't have been there in the first place.
We have invaded not our territory, poorly managed this situation, put absolute idiots in charge.
Colonel Travis is a drunk.
And now it's time to really step up. This is a good metaphor for us. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Yeah, I feel like they could do better. Yeah. Maybe they can't, actually. Yeah,
it's more apt than you would expect.
Yeah. So Ted gets to talking about the state of the world and the things that are happening around the country.
Sure.
And I just felt like, hey, Ted, your racism might be showing a little bit here.
But I was there in 67 when all my buddies, all my...
He's talking about in Detroit.
Yeah.
Black musician friends. We always jammed together and collaborated. We always hung out together. And I had friends of every imaginable ethnicity and color and creed and walk of life. And then in 67...
Oh, you have black friends?
They burnt down the city. The rioters went berserk and burnt down their own city, this beautiful architecture. So I have a good perspective of the goodwill and the positive brotherhood that existed amongst all of us in Detroit. And then a lunatic... and went nuts, much like precursors to Antifa. Then I was in Los Angeles in 92 when the Rodney King verdict came in, and once again, the idiots committed cultural suicide and destroyed their own neighborhoods and lives and viciously attacked and murdered people. So what I'm seeing today, it breaks my heart to admit, but it's bigger and worse and uglier and more evil.
That just is absurd. I mean, like, what you have there is a guy who's very committed to not recognizing what came right before those things.
No, not interested.
Not interested in discussing.
I was there in 67 and randomly, for no reason at all.
What happened in the early 60s? What happened in Detroit that led up to that that riot? Anything. What happened in the lead up to the LA riots?
I don't know.
What happened in the lead up to the situation that we're in now? What is the larger conversation that these flashpoints exist within?
I just can't
Are you
think
interested
of anything.
In any of that at all, or are you just wanting to look at this from an optics perspective and be like, black people burn their own things?
Yeah, honestly, no. What he's saying is, like, every now and again black people act crazy.
Yeah,
and I don't know why.
No, that is the presentation that he's putting forth, and it's like, wow.
Ooh.
Yeah. So Ted Nugent coming on, if he had any principles and believed in anything that he purports to believe in, he should be dressing down Alex about 100. His argument earlier in the show about a guy having a gun at a protest, somehow making it like, oh, well, you get shot.
Yeah.
But it turns out Ted Nugent also seems to think that if you have a weapon, you're no longer a protester.
Only they called them peaceful protesters. Peaceful protesters don't destroy buildings, they don't have Molotov cocktails, they don't kill retired cops, and they don't wear helmets and have weapons on them. That's not a peaceful protest.
Well, I mean, the retired cop in St. Louis, we have a conversation about how that was a murder, and that wasn't necessarily protesters. There's a larger situation going on there. But leaving that aside, when he says there, if you have weapons, you're not a peaceful protester, bad news about every Second Amendment protest that has ever happened.
Yeah, is he saying that it is okay for us to en masse kill them because they are walking around with guns? Or that it's fine if we did?
No, I mean, he's articulating a point very poorly because he doesn't recognize what the implications of his statements are. He doesn't recognize that condemning these protesters for having weapons or being armed opens up the criticism to everything that he supports.
Yeah, no.
He just doesn't recognize it because it doesn't matter to him.
He doesn't
care. Isn't a principle to him. It is a weapon that he can use against the people he doesn't like.
Yep.
That is all. Like, he doesn't care about the Second Amendment.
No, it's disgusting.
None of these people give a shit.
God. If we lived in a reasonable world, every time he went on a show, they would just play that clip and be like, so you don't believe in the Second Amendment at all? And he'd be like, blah, 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 and then they'd kick him off.
Yeah, I mean,
that's it.
If you
believe in nothing.
Yeah, if your threshold for like what is or is not a peaceful protester is, we could take the damaging property stuff and discuss whether or not that's violence. I don't want to have that conversation with Ted Nugent.
Nope.
But it is a conversation that
bad faith conversation.
Well, it's a conversation that you could have where people could have differences of opinion.
Sure.
I would not say that damage to property is inherently violence, but be that as it may, leaving that aside, his threshold seems to be that if you have a weapon, you're not a peaceful protester. And I would challenge him on that.
Would challenge him on that.
I would like to see you debate him. And again, it is now 9 days.
God damn it, Rand Paul.
Since Rand Paul has refused to debate
you. What? Now I want to hear what Rand Paul thinks about this.
Oh.
Is Rand Paul going to defend the Second Amendment, or is he going to go along like a coward with Alex Jones and noted predator racist monster Ted Nugent? Or noted predator racist monster Alex Jones as well?
I don't know.
I don't know. We'll see. Yep. Rand Paul, we will see if you get the guts.
Coward. So anyway, now that Ted Nugent has fully embarrassed himself and indicated that he is also a gun grabber, he leaves. And that's where I kind of was broken in terms of my interest in this. I was like, I don't know. You lose a little steam whenever one of these like seemingly like the pillars, the keystones seem to fall, guns. Yeah, some people shouldn't have them.
Yeah. No, what? It's totally, I feel like a parent, like, I'm not mad at you. Uh-huh. I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
You have failed on a level that I cannot even comprehend.
And you didn't need to.
You had no reason to.
You didn't need to.
You could have just not talked about it.
Sure. You could not talk about it, or you could talk about it in a more robust way. You could talk about it with more, a little bit more nuance, where you can protect your gun position while at the same time condemning protests if you so need to.
Right.
You don't need to come at this. If you're Alex from a position of, this guy had a gun and that justifies him being shot.
Yeah.
You don't need to. If your principal is so gun absolutist the way Alex is, it seems dumb.
Yeah.
It seems it denotes to me a lack of solidity. That's not the right word.
Solidarity?
No. Well, certainly. But all, just
foundation.
That's the thing I'm trying to evoke.
Yeah.
There's a lack of anything that's grounding these arguments that he has. They're all just branches with no trunk.
Yeah.
It's a bummer. It's a bummer.
In a certain sense, I kind of, so here my armchair bullshit on this is, part of me thinks that because they lived through Obama and they're so racist and they weren't allowed to just say we hate him because he's black and we don't like that, they made every argument in bad faith. Every argument they made was in bad faith.
Mm-hmm.
So they only know how to make bad faith arguments at this point. You know, they don't have anything that they believe in, because what they believed in during Obama's years was just, we don't like him because he's black.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not allowing us to say that. So we have to make up some bullshit about he's grabbing guns. That's a bad faith argument.
Mm-hmm.
And so now when we're in this situation, I don't even know if he probably doesn't believe that. If you were to, maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. But if you were to sit him down and just really get to the point in private, it's like, you know, you're making a bad faith argument to these people in order to justify the violence that you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I can see where you're coming from, but I disagree with you.
Yeah.
I would say that maybe people got accustomed to this kind of behavior throughout Obama's years. But the stuff you're talking about, those same sorts of arguments predate Obama.
Yeah, you're right.
So it's not like they had
It's
not like they had some kind of vested interest in masking their racism behind gun grabbing arguments.
Well, I mean,
like
in the 90s, you can just say that shit. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the idea of Clinton coming for guns, or like Alex making terror storm documentaries in the Bush years.
Right.
Like, those things pre-existed.
Right.
Now,
fascists always make bad faith arguments.
If you want to, like, dig incredibly deep into the fertile soil of the
anti-communists?
Sure. The terrifying crossroads of anti-communism, multiculturalism, pro corporate interests that intersect there, I think you could probably make a certain case that a lot of these arguments that do go back to older times, they do have a racist element to it.
100%.
But the way that you're describing it, with like trying to make up for arguments that they had that were bad faith about Obama, I don't think that works.
I mean, I'm more like, they just don't even know how to have an honest discussion. Like, they genuinely just can't do it. Everything is filtered through this prism of bullshit, you know?
Possibly. I would say that there's also a possibility that they don't see a point in having a real conversation.
You're probably 100%
you
right.
You know, like, there is a utility, and clearly it works to just do bullshit.
Yeah, you're
so maybe they just don't see the why have a foundation anymore. It doesn't matter.
No, on a fundamental level, you are getting somewhere closer to the truth than I can imagine.
Maybe, but my point isn't to say that I'm right. I'm saying that, like, there are other options.
No, totally.
What you're saying could be right, or it could be an entirely like
it's a red herring.
Your theory that they can't have a conversation about the like anything real, possible. Right. Also, could be possible that they're completely aware of how trivial and bullshit this is.
Yeah.
And there's like, why try?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the reality
why
is.
Why try? You know, trying really makes it tough on you.
Yeah. And the thing that makes it also really difficult is that, like, we just have these public-facing pieces of information to go from.
Sure.
And quite frankly, this show would look exactly the same if Alex was incapable of doing a good job or knew that it's expedient and easier for him to do a bad job.
Yeah.
It would look exactly the same. So I have no fucking idea.
Yeah, that's fair.
I know that Alex is stupid, but I know that he's also not as stupid as, like the...
Carpe tonked.
Who knows if he's even... Look, what I mean is he's not as stupid as, like, the caricature that you could have of him based on how stupid he acts.
Sure.
So, anyway, Ted Nugent's appearance on the show... took away my will to live, and we just have a few clips left of the rest of the show. Alex is excited because Joe Rogan has fully announced now that he's moving to Texas.
He's free.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Alex also has to recognize that, like, yeah, Rogan has come out and said that stuff that I said about him wasn't true. Now, it is true that I told you he was going to move to Texas, and he is, but I did make up some stuff.
Really?
I made up
some stuff. He admitted it.
I made up
some stuff. What a son of a...
But, I don't know, Spotify went completely crazy. When Joe told me I could say all that stuff, then I kind of elaborated on it and kind of...
Elaborated.
Added some hyperbole, probably. Because, you know, probably. I took what Joe said. Yes, wow, he's standing up to YouTube, standing up to censors. You know, the stuff he told me, but I'm not going to pontificate on that right now.
Probably smart, because you just said you lied.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I
he said he probably lied.
I had some hyperbole.
I probably
made up some stuff.
All right.
Because Joe Rogan's one of the only things that makes me relevant to people who aren't completely nuts. And I really want to play up my connection to him. He's basically my best friend.
I'm going to be honest with you. When people talk, I only hear what I want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard for me to relay information from other conversations to you because it's all made up in my head.
Yeah. It's very weird. Very weird.
Yeah.
So Alex is selling a new product that isn't actually a new product, but he's trying to pretend it's a new product. Sure. I think he's trying to clear out the warehouse.
Separately, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a solution to tyranny. It's only one part of the overall solution, and it funds the InfoWar. These privacy pockets I have are almost 100% effective. We've tested them out. They're one of the best units out there. Sometimes right up next to a cell tower, it'll still penetrate through and be able to ping your cell phone, track your location, and steal your data. Stop Bill Clinton.
What?
And Hillary Clinton and their global initiative with the NIH and the UN, WHO running the contact tracers or beta testing in blue cities that are going to come with forced inoculations as early as next year. They already got your data. The apps are already on your phone, whether you take them off or not. Google and Apple admit they're doing it together 4 months ago.
Sure.
Everything is tracked. And so when you put your phone in this, it's a way to control it. It's a way to not let it run your life. It's a way to not let it dominate you. And it slips right in your pocket. It's a thin Faraday cage. They have units out there that are similar to this one or the same unit they're selling for $35 online. Amazon sells them for like $22. And, you know, they always try to have the lowest price. $19.95. These cost us almost $12 a piece.
Whoa.
So the $8 comes in to fund our operation. But I want you to get these. And get the habit. Think about how evil these cell phones are.
They're so evil, these cell phones. This is not a new product for Alex, but he's acting like it is. This was like a junior varsity product that he'd have like Owen sell.
Sure.
Is the Block It Pocket that he had for like a while, but he wouldn't dignify it with like pushing on his show unless it was like a really heavy 5G period.
Yeah,
you know, we're really going hard.
Right.
Or like, I don't know. I would imagine that like when Snowden went on Rogan, maybe Alex tried to sell some Block It Pockets.
Day.
Yeah, but it's not. I hear this and I'm like, wow, you're really you're trying to move those, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotta get rid of them.
Yeah.
Gotta get rid of them.
That seems very sad to me.
Yeah, not good.
No. Alex wouldn't even waste his time trying to sell it in the past.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah. Oh, you know what he even did?
What?
He had his son selling it back when he was like 17, 16.
Oh, no.
He was like, yeah, the kids love their cell phones.
Jeez.
What I do is I have a Faraday cage.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
you got a product now relegated to nobody listening gets to sell it. That's bad.
Yeah. So now Alex is doing it himself, which, whatever. So one thing that I think is really interesting is that Alex really wants to insinuate himself with the story about Sinclair and Eric Bolling.
Right.
He really wants everyone to know that, like, hey, maybe I'm the source on this story.
Sure.
Maybe.
Sure.
Sinclair, bigger than Fox News, thousands of stations across the country, says it will postpone and rework segment featuring conspiracy theory about Fauci with the Eric Bolling show. I personally sent Bolling articles about this in the last few months. He knew all about it already. And what did he cover? NIH.gov. NIH lifts funding pause on gain-of-function research with coronaviruses. Dr. Fauci backed controversial Wuhan lab with U.S. dollars for risky coronavirus research at Wuhan lab. Newsweek. Newsweek. Look right there. That's Newsweek. New Scientist. Lab-made coronavirus triggers debate. Obama and Fauci transfer weaponized coronavirus chimera from bats to China to 2015. This is the reality.
That might have been editorializing there, but what you see is the way that he covers news.
Yeah.
He just reads headlines and then starts rambling about stuff that isn't in those articles.
Of course.
That you might assume could be in the article based on the headline or the warped version of the headline that Alex is editorializing.
No. He essentially plays Whose Line Is It Anyway every day.
Somewhat, yeah. But with, like, really fucked up topics.
Yeah. I am.
And he screams about murder a lot.
Yeah. No, that was Ryan Stiles. Ryan Stiles was big on murder for a while there.
Colin Mockery was the one who would defame people. That's why it's not on the air anymore.
that would do it. Look, I know it happens all the time, but whenever he screams it, like, that's Newsweek, as a way of legitimizing the paper.
Yeah.
You know, like, everybody's like, see? Even Newsweek is saying it, is him saying that's a reliable news source.
Yeah, and all it really does is highlight how unreliable he is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
this
not
isn't,
just
this
that.
Isn't my dumbass saying
yeah,
this.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. 100%.
I know you know that I make shit up.
Listen.
But Newsweek has editors.
I'm not linking to a video of this show. I'm linking to a real paper. Now, if they print anything I don't like, they're fake news, bullshit, controlled by the globalists.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're still more trustworthy than me.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
So we have one last clip here, and it's Alex talking about how he thinks that deaths are going to go up soon.
Wow.
And I think he's trying to get ahead of this, because
right.
that might be something that he's going to have to spin.
Yeah.
And this is a weak effort.
The cases are skyrocketing. The deaths are going way down. I predict they'll go spiking again though when the numbers come in at the end of the month, because July is when the new doctors and nurses come in for their residencies,
really?
And they call it
really
the July effect. I get into real statistics, real information, real research.
The July effect is a real thing that people discuss.
Sure.
But there isn't really a consensus on whether or not it is actually a real thing. I'll read to you here from a 2017 article in the Canadian Association of Medicine's journal. Quote, a 2016 analysis in the Journal of Patient Safety pooled data collected between 2011 and 2015 from nearly 120 academic medical centers and more than 333 affiliated hospitals from all geographic regions in the United States. It concluded that there was no evidence to support the July effect on survival outcomes at U.S. academic medical centers. Studies focused on specific specialties and patient populations have indicated mixed results. Despite this lack of strong supporting evidence, a national survey of U.S. academic leaders in internal medicine published in 2016 in the American Journal of Medicine revealed that most internal medicine residency program leaders believe in the potential for a July effect. A 2013 article in the Harvard Medical School Review says, quote, a new study published October 23rd in Circulation by researchers at Harvard Medical School, Stanford University Hospitals, University of Southern California, and the Rand Corporation has found that while the so-called July effect is negligible in most cases, it is a serious concern for high-risk patients. That isn't too surprising, given that experienced doctors have more experience in high-intensity, dangerous situations, but also the discrepancy isn't something that should make people avoid getting healthcare in July.
Yeah.
This is an issue that only relates to teaching hospitals where there are residents. So that's one factor.
Okay.
Other studies have shown that, quote, patients at teaching hospitals have a lower risk of dying than at non-teaching hospitals. But in July, the risk at teaching hospitals rose to the same level that patients at non-teaching hospitals faced.
Okay.
So it comes up to about normal.
Sure.
Something tells me that Alex doesn't get into the real research about this.
Come on.
Instead, maybe like he saw a meme about it and then wrote a story in his head about cartoonish versions of med students killing people at hospitals every summer.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Real research.
Yeah, like a resident is walking in acting all wacky.
Yeah.
You know, like forgetting all kinds of stuff in the surgery.
Oh, no, I was supposed to use a scalpel. I accidentally hit this person with an oversized hammer.
Oh, no. Yeah. I was going to use this, but then, it was a rose and it squirted on his face. It was terrible.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to look at. I mean, because you would expect that for people who are in really serious conditions that maybe are more difficult to diagnose or difficult to handle, someone who is not as experienced could, even with supervision, could be less capable of taking care of that situation.
Sure.
You could imagine that being the case. Yeah. It's possible. From a number of the things that I was reading, the issue seems to be where there can be a problem, it's administrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a factor of whether or not residents can handle medical situations.
Sure.
It's more a circumstance of like, is this hospital supervising people appropriately?
Right.
And so, you know, it's not a magical thing where there's like tons more deaths in July.
Sure, sure, sure.
Alex is just trying to find a way to preemptively explain away why, we might see some spiking deaths soon.
Now, it's obviously the July effect. It's not because as we see cases rise and we know that it's kind of a 2-week issue kind of
the lagging indicator,
then that would suggest that after we see all these cases rise in a short period of time, we will then see deaths rise appropriately.
I predict that if that is the way things go and we see deaths start to rise, this will be Alex's spin.
It's a July effect,
which is going to be interesting come August.
Wow.
But we'll see what happens.
Brutal.
Anyway, Alex's return to studio was worse than Saturday.
It was not a home run.
Saturday was boring.
I long for the Saturday.
Saturday was unimpactful and uninspired.
Didn't
but
have Ted Nugent. That's a win.
And the loss of Alex's Second Amendment beliefs.
Yeah.
That's also kind of...
I know it shouldn't be, but it really does kind of feel like that's a blow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why.
Well, because I think it's one of the last things that isn't racism with him, or like white identity.
Yeah,
it's
true.
It's one of the last pillars that is kind of, you know, arguably like I don't believe in gun absolutism in the same way that he does. But I definitely agree with people's right to protect themselves and be armed.
Yeah,
I think that there is a valuable point to be made in defending the Second Amendment.
To
what extent, that's where the debate is.
Sure.
But I think that it's one of the beliefs that Alex has that's so central to himself that you could look at as a political belief that you could have a conversation about.
Sure.
What's left is white identity
and
lies. And both of those things, I think, have no place.
Yeah.
And so when the crumbling comes of the Second Amendment,
you just got...
There's
whiteness
nothing.
And lies.
Congratulations, Alex.
Yeah, you almost reached bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Now all you got to do is get rid of whiteness and lies, and then you're really empty.
Well, then it'll be an interesting one-hand clapping.
Yeah, it'll be a true empty vessel.
Yeah,
like there's nothing in there. It could be anything could come out.
Yeah. Anyway, Alex, you should quit.
Absolutely.
Please do.
Yeah.
But we'll be back on Friday.
Indeed.
We'll see what we got going on then. But until then, Jordan, we have a website.
We do have a website. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yep. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's at knowledge_fight and at go to bed Jordan.
Yeah. We're also on Facebook.
We are on Facebook. Download, write, review. And if you could, please find a local charity or bail fund, especially in your area, and help out people doing the Lord's work.
Yep. We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark.
And is there a war on Western civilization?
Alex, why did you interrupt me? I was in the middle of saying the nicknames that I used at the end of this episode. I was trying to do my bit, and no, there is not a war on the West.
Listen, I don't
Andy
know if I
Kansas,
support this.
You're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.